And the Torah is Ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself, which is really a bad translation because it says Ve'ahavta l'reicha, which is love your friend as yourself or love your beloved as yourself. So it's not really a neighbor, it's more a friend. And we think of people as neighbors, but really they should be more than neighbors, and they should be more a friend. What is a friend? A friend is someone, at least the minimum friendship is he doesn't do any harm to someone. So if you have a neighbor who doesn't do you any harm, you're a sort of friend. That's the lower category of friendship, which is what Hillel mentions. It's a beautiful story. It says a non-Jew comes to Hillel. He's a famous Talmudic scholar at the time of the Second Temple. And he asks Hillel, he says, teach me the whole Torah on one foot, because I want to be a Jew. But I want to know what the whole Torah is about. You know, sum it up. I don't have time. I don't have 50 years to learn about Judaism. So just tell me the whole Torah on one foot. So Hillel says, he says, don't do to others what you don't want others to do to you. Which is a lower level of Ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. It's a lower level of loving your neighbor as yourself. And therefore the person says, oh, is that the whole Torah? Okay, that's nice and short. So Hillel says, okay, that's the whole Torah, but you have to go and learn the commentary. Everything else is commentary. Go and learn the commentary. So that's how he summed up the Torah. That's a lower level of loving one's neighbor, is the negative. Don't do bad to someone. That's a lower level. The same story happened 3 generations later to Rabbi Akiva. And the non-Jew comes to Rabbi Akiva and says, tell me the whole Torah on one foot. Sum it up for me. So Rabbi Akiva says, Ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, love your neighbor as your friend. Love your friend as yourself. The rest is all commentary. So here he gave him the positive. Hillel gave the negative. Rabbi Akiva gave the positive. So there's 2 different levels. One is a friend who doesn't harm. That's also a kind of friend. That's a lower level friend. The higher level friend is someone who helps. Not only doesn't he do any harm, but he helps as well. So that's a higher level friendship. And we're going to talk about the different kinds of kindness. Number one is physical help. When we think about kindness, today most people in America, we think about the checkbook. And that's normally the person, you know, you ask someone for help. Automatically they whip out the checkbook. How much do you want? But the truth is, that's only one small part of kindness. The main part of kindness is physical kindness. Assisting someone to lift something, to carry something. Someone wants to move house and you have an opportunity to help them move house. Giving someone a ride, you see someone walking and they need a ride, giving someone a ride. Entertaining guests, that's the physical kindness which a person does with their body. And that is much more important than just financial kindness. So one's one body, a person actually moves oneself, that takes a lot more effort, a lot more time. Bikur Cholim is visiting the sick, which you're going to come to, because that involves another aspect as well. So physical help is number one. Number two is, and it's not any particular kind of order. All these things are facets of kindness. The second facet is mental support, which today a lot of people need mental support. You know, someone lost a relative, they need mental support. It's very, very important that your people care about them. Listening to someone else's problems, that's a kind of help, just listening. Today people don't want to hear problems because they already have enough problems of their own. You know, we don't like hearing other people's problems. If someone comes to you and tells you problems, most people run away. Oh yeah, okay. They cut the conversation short and they move away. But it's very, very important. People call me all the time because they just want to relieve themselves of their problems. So it doesn't matter if they think someone's listening, that already cures their problems. And people pay psychologists $70 an hour, whatever it is, just to hear their problems. 95, whatever it is. You know the famous joke, it says a psychiatrist had a patient who was suicidal. So he tells the secretary, he says, make sure you get the money up front. Okay, but that's mental support is very, very important. Why? You listen to others' problems, empathizing with them, helping people to get a positive attitude. That's a very, very important part of kindness. We don't think of it as kindness, but it is. Just listening to people's problems is an act of kindness. You're giving them time, and you're giving them part of yourself. Because other people's problems weigh down on someone. You hear someone's problems, and so after a while it gets down to you. It hits the person. So that's also very important. Another kind of act of kindness is spiritual kindness. Teaching others about God. Teaching the Torah, which was Abraham Avinu, our forefather. He did acts of kindness physically by having guests, but he also did acts of kindness spiritually by teaching them about God. So spreading the Torah. We find in the mitzvah in the Torah of Hashavat Aveda, which is returning a lost object. Someone loses something, you see something fall from them, you have a mitzvah to return it to them. And there's a whole special chapter in Masechet Bava Metzia which deals with this whole issue of returning lost objects. It's one of the first things which a child in school learns. It's interesting. The tradition is, the first thing a person learns in the yeshiva, when you go to the yeshiva, in the Gemara, is Talmud, is the laws of returning lost objects. Why is that? So it's interesting, I just read a story. Moshe Feinstein was a great rabbi who just passed away a few years ago. He, in his yeshiva, the rabbis wanted to change the curriculum. They said, we want to start with something easier than this. This is too complicated for children. Children learning, you know, lost objects, has to have a sign. Where do you find it? Is the person give up hope? Does he not give up hope? It's complicated. Let's learn something easy. The rules of Pesach. Talk about Pesachim or something easy. Something the child can grasp in his daily routine of festivals. So Moshe Feinstein says, no. This is very important. This is our tradition. This is the first thing we teach a child. What do we teach a child first? What's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. We have to delineate property rights. We teach a child from day one not to steal. Ethics. So ethics is very important. How do you teach a child ethics? The ground foundation of everything is ethics. You teach a child ethics by returning lost objects. There's a beautiful story in it. It says in Israel, a girl went to seminary in Israel. And the rabbi in the seminary was teaching laws of lost objects. She says, this is not spiritual enough for me. She runs away to India and joins an ashram over there. And one day she's walking with the great spiritual leader, and he finds a wallet on the street, puts it in his pocket, and that's it. She says, one second, what are you going to do with the wallet? He says, finders keepers, losers weepers. So then she remembers the clash he had in Israel and the yeshiva. She says, now she realizes which one is the greater system. So some systems look great on the outside, but there's no ethics. There's no ethics beyond it. So the ethics of returning lost objects applies also to spiritual lost objects. What happens to people who lost their heritage? There's a break in the heritage. There's a mitzvah to return the heritage to them as well. So that's also a spiritual kindness which a person can do to others. Bring them closer to the heritage. Number four is speaking positively about others. Just by speech, a person can be kind with their speech. So a person comes in and he tastes someone's cooking. So, okay. So he can be very nasty and say, you know, it's disgusting, terrible. Or a person can be kind and say, you know what, oh, not bad, it's very good, good, good. Encourage someone. So verbally encourage someone, that's also an act of kindness, especially when it's not deserved. You know, there's an interesting Talmud. The Talmud says at a wedding, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says you have to praise the bride that she's beautiful, even if she's not. You can tell her a lie. It's a mitzvah to tell a lie where? To make a bride and groom happy. Beit Hillel says, no, you can't do that. You can praise the bride up to a certain point. You can't say she's beautiful and she's not beautiful. You can praise her about something else. You can say that she has good character traits, she's this and that, she's a good cook, whatever it is. Beit Shammai says, no, you can even go abroad. Why? That's kindness, verbal kindness. So verbal kindness is a tremendous mitzvah. And a person who's critical does not do this act of kindness. In fact, does damage. If he's critical, when husband and wife are there and they criticize one of the parties in front of the other spouse, when a family, they criticize someone in the family, that does a lot of damage. So there's acts of kindness, which is verbal kindness as well. So giving positive encouragement, praise, is an act of verbal kindness. There's financial support, which normally we think about when we talk about kindness, we normally think about financial support, which we're going to talk about tonight. That's the topic tonight, is the eight levels of charity, which is financial support. Then there's visiting the sick. The visiting the sick consists of three parts to the mitzvah. The person thinks, you know, I went to the hospital to say, I said hello to someone, that's it, I did my mitzvah. The answer is no, that's only one part of the mitzvah. One part of the mitzvah is to cheer them up. The second part of the mitzvah is to see what they need. You know, today we're fortunate because we have a framework. There's a 911, there's Hatzalah, there's hospitals, there's nurses. But in the old days, if a person never had family, the person was lost. If a person was sick and he never had a family, he had no one to look after him. Talmud says, Rabbi Akiva, one of his students, didn't show up for class. So one day, 2 days, 3 days, didn't show up for class. So he asked the other students, where's this student? We don't know. No idea. He didn't show up. No, no. So he goes to his house and he finds the student is in bed, sick. And the whole house is filthy. The guy's starving. No one cooked for him. He can't move from his bed. So he cooks for him, cleans for him, looks after him. He says, Rabbi, he says, you gave me life. So Rabbi Akiva goes back the next day to his yeshiva and he tells the students, Bikur Cholim. Visit the sick. It's a mitzvah, a very big mitzvah to visit the sick. And the truth is, visiting the sick can keep them alive. Even though there's hospitals, I go and visit someone in the old age home, and I know that she has no relatives, no one to look after her. Just the act that people care, just the knowing that people care on the outside, gives them the strength to continue. If people realize, people think, if no one cares about me, that's a great part of despondency and depression that causes. So therefore, visiting the sick, number one, is to cheer people up. Number two is to see if they need anything. They need cooking, they need food, they need something else which they can't get. There's a mitzvah to provide for them. That's part of visiting the sick. And the third thing is, also an important element, is praying for them. Now it's interesting, in Jewish law, when a person's alone, they should pray in Hebrew. Hebrew is a language which the angels understand, according to the Talmud. Person's alone, when they pray with a minyan, you can pray in any language. It's one of the ironies. When you pray with a minyan, you can pray in any language. You can pray in English and any other language you want. When you pray by yourself, you've got to pray in Hebrew. Obviously, unless a person doesn't know Hebrew, then it's obviously it's better to pray in another language. But a person who knows Hebrew should pray in Hebrew when they're alone. Except when a person's visiting the sick. When a person's visiting the sick, it's as if it's a minyan. It's God's presence is with a sick person. And the truth is, if a sick person believes in God, it goes a long way in aiding their health. And they've done surveys and research in Harvard to bear this out. They took 400 people who had heart attacks and in the cardiac care unit, and 200 of them, they said, people are praying for you. They told 200 people, people are praying for you. The other 200, they didn't say people are praying for them. And they found that people who were praying for them, people themselves, they felt it. They felt better, there were less complications. This is a research which was done recently. So that's interesting. That's part of visiting the sick, is praying for someone and letting them know that God also cares for them. So this way they don't only feel people care for them, there's a higher authority who cares for them as well. And the last kind of kindness, which is a type of kindness, is chesed shel emet, kindness of truth, which is kindness to a deceased person, looking after the body and preparing for the burial. All these things are acts of kindness. There are seven different kinds of acts of kindness which we discussed. And but I'm just giving examples. There must be many more different kinds of acts of kindness. A person can find many different kinds of acts of kindness. So just phoning someone, just calling someone, could be an act of kindness. Someone's lonely. You know they're lonely. Just give them a call. Someone's sick. Just calling them up. You do a mitzvah of comforting someone and giving them encouragement, which is very important. The Code of Jewish Law has a whole section on the laws of charity. It talks about monetary charity. He has a section on Bikur Halim as well, on visiting the sick. He has a section on, you know, it's interesting, no code of law anywhere discusses these issues. For example, American law, right? They're busy in Congress discussing law, right? There's no laws on the books for visiting the sick. No country in the world passed legislation. You have to visit the sick. Judaism is not like any other religion in the world. Why? Most religions in the world are horizontal religions. Just like, I know you heard of monopolies. There's horizontal monopolies and there's vertical monopolies. Horizontal monopolies are that you buy all the stores which do the same thing. You buy the same factories that do the same thing. You want to spread out. So most religions, they just want you to believe in God and serve God, and that's it. That's all. Judaism is a vertical monopoly. What does that mean? It's a vertical religion, which means we start with ground. There's no other religion that says you have to live in a certain country. Judaism says you have to live in a certain country. Why? Because Judaism says it's a system from A to Z. Today when we think about Judaism, we think about rituals. It's a big mistake. Judaism runs the whole range, from rituals to civil laws to ethical laws. It's a code of law coming from when a person wakes up in the morning, right, so a person goes to sleep. It's from the beginning of time till the Messianic era. The law covers everything. There's no, all aspects of society, all aspects of government are covered by Jewish law. Unfortunately, what happened was, when we were exiled, when we put in ghettos, civil law covered us, external law covered us, all the civil codes were covered. So when people think about Judaism today, they think about kosher, and they think about Shabbat, and they think about rituals. They don't think that there's laws over here which should cover everything, all facets of government. And so really, it's a vertical religion which covers everything. No other religion covers everything. And no country's legislation, no civil legislation, covers all these ethical ideas of visiting the sick, of going to visit the mourner. Which country has a law on its books saying you have to go and visit the sick, you have to go and visit the mourners? There's no countries like that. And there's no religions which tell you how to run a country. So Judaism covers everything. It's a vertical religion. From the beginning to the end, A to Z. So the Code of Jewish Law has got a whole section on laws of charity, laws of what's called tzedakah. Charity is a very bad word. Because when we think about charity, we think about Now, the guy doesn't deserve it. I'm just doing an act of charity. I don't really need to do it, but I'm going to do it. And the word in Hebrew for charity is tzedakah. Tzedakah comes from the word tzaddik or tzedek, which means righteousness. It's an act of righteousness. And the word righteousness comes from the word right. It's the right thing to do. I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. Not because I don't need to, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's the right thing to do. I have to do it. In fact, the Torah says, God tells us, He says, if you see a poor person, patoach tiftach et yadecha, open your hand. And it's one of the hardest things to do, is to open one's hand. Why? A person goes to work, and they work very hard. Most of us, we're in the same boat. You know, nothing comes easy. We work hard in life, and we try and make ends meet, and we try and make a big extra, and we try and save up for our old age, and for our kids, and for this, and for that, and the other. Here comes a poor man, not related to it at all. And the guy stretches out his hand. The Torah says, open your hand. Give him. Why? Why do I have to give him? And we find the Mishnah says, Pirkei Avot tells us, there's different levels of people. Some people say, what's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. So the Mishnah says two opinions over there. It says that's the average individual. The average individual knows property rights. What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. However, the Talmud says, and some people say, that's Midat Sodom. That was the way of the people of Sodom. The people of Sodom were very, very cruel people. Why? They never gave charity to anyone. Why not? What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. What does that mean? If God created me wealthy and you poor, that's what God wants. And that's it. Someone comes for help, I'm sorry, can't help you. That's your lot, and this is my lot. The Jewish perspective is the total opposite. If God created me rich and you poor, He gave me the ability to help you. And if I have a responsibility to help you. But that's a very hard concept. It's a very advanced concept. And today, more and more societies are grasping this concept, the idea of a social welfare program. It's a Jewish concept, which is thousands of years old, which only in the recent 50 years or so, governments have grasped this concept. Prior to that, there was nothing. There's no social welfare programs. Judaism gets social welfare programs going back thousands of years. There's a concept in the Torah of the prohibition of taking interest from lending money. And today we know any country's economy is going to be shut. You take out this interest factor, no one's going to lend money. But in Jewish law, there's a concept of gemach, which is lending free of interest, free loan societies. This is a concept thousands of years old, mentioned in the Torah 3,500 years ago. So all these things are ethical concepts. So Torah says, give. You have to give him. You will surely open your hand. It's rough. Why do I have to open my hand? So the view of life which Judaism gives us is, whatever we have doesn't belong to us. We are just the managers. God gave us certain things, and we have to manage it for God. Once a person thinks it's mine, God takes it away. A person says, you know, it's not mine. God gave it to me for safekeeping, to do acts of goodness with my money. And so therefore, it's a big responsibility. A person who's wealthy has got a tremendously big responsibility to make sure people are well fed, people are well clothed in the neighborhood. We're going to talk about that. Well, there's a beautiful story. The famous rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Very, very ethical personality par excellence. There's a book called Sparks of Musar. That's a very small book about certain stories which happened in his life. So it's a very, very interesting story. One day he won the lottery. Very wealthy man. Everyone's happy. His whole household is happy. He's going around miserable. I said, Rabbi, what happened? You won the lottery. He said, yeah, I can't sleep at night. I've got so many responsibilities now. There's a poor man down the street who I'm not helping. It's my responsibility to make sure everyone in the town is well fed. People come on the train station, they have no food, they have nothing. I have to help them. So he gave away his money as soon as possible. So everyone thought he's going to splurge, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. He gave it away as soon as possible. He couldn't sleep at night. He had that responsibility. So today we think, you know, we want to be wealthy. We want to, everything should go, you know, we want money, money, money. But we have to realize with it comes responsibility. It's a tremendous amount of responsibility. We are just the managers for what we have. That's why in Hebrew, it's interesting, in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh. Hebrew is called the holy language. Why is it holy? The Rambam says, because there's no dirty words in Hebrew. It's interesting, in Israel, if you want to curse someone, you use Arabic or you use English. There's no dirty words in Hebrew. Lashon HaKodesh is the holy language. That's Rambam's opinion of what holy language is. But there's other things in Hebrew as well. There's no word for it's mine in Hebrew. How do you say it's mine? Yeshli. Yeshli. I have to me. It's not mine. It happens to be for me right now. but it's not mine. Li is me, it's to me, but it doesn't mean it's mine. There's no word in Hebrew, or yeshli, I have, but it's not. There's no word for saying it's mine. Yeshli, shayachli. Today in Hebrew they use the word shayachli. It happens to be in my possession right now, shayachli. It's connected to me. But is it mine? It's not mine. So it's interesting, that's the holy language. A holy language gives you tremendous ethics in the language. It's built into the language, that's the holy language. So the Code of Jewish Law has a whole section on what we call tzedakah. I don't want to call it charity. It's not charity, it's tzedakah, which is the right thing to do. So the Code of Jewish Law goes into details, and he says there are certain levels of charity in terms of what comes first, priorities in charity. In other words, if 50 people want charity, there's a priority in charity. Now there's a saying in English, which is a Jewish proverb, charity begins at home. Very, very important idea. Charity begins at home. The Code of Jewish Law tells us priority in charity. Who do you give charity to? Tzedakah. He says one's older children. The children move out of the house. You have no mitzvah to support them anymore. They're independent. Once they're independent, that's it. You fulfill your mitzvah, you raise the children, give them education, they're independent. What happens? The children fall in hard times. Children need help. Shulchan Aruch says they come first, priority. Children come first, number one. One's parents, if they can't support themselves, they also come first. So the first level, charity begins at home. We learn this now from the Prophet Isaiah. Prophet Isaiah says, Mibsarcha al titalem, don't hide from your own flesh and blood. We find Abraham, when he looks for his wife or his son, where does he go to? He goes to his relatives. Far away, distant relatives. Says, better my son marries into a relative, and she comes and joins me, this way I can do kindness to my own relative first. It's very important to look after one's relatives, that's the first priority. So children come first, parents come first, and then number two it says other relatives. So you look after your parents, look after your children, look after the other relatives. And then he says, look after other members of one's household. One has servants, one has a babysitter, and she's hard up, or whatever it is, people work in the house. The cleaner woman who comes to clean, and she's working for you, and she's hard up, help her. The poor of your town, next in level, poor people in your town. Then the poor of Israel, and then the poor of other places. So Israel comes before other towns in the same country. That's the Code of Jewish Law. The Rama, who is the Ashkenazi Rabbi, Moshe Isserles, gives different levels of priority. And he says a very important thing. Who comes first? You yourself come first. Which is obvious to everyone, but it may not be so obvious. And so, number one, the Torah says, love your friend as yourself. Supposing I don't love myself. Right. You hear sometimes, a lot of people, they say, you know what? You catch them gossiping about people. Say, look, if I'd have said this about myself, I wouldn't mind it. If I'd have made a mockery of myself like this, I also wouldn't mind. So what? You don't love yourself. First, you have to love yourself. It's a mitzvah to love yourself. So it's a mitzvah to love oneself, look after oneself. The Torah says, Ushmartem me'od lenafshotechem. Look after yourself very carefully. We have to look after our health. We have to look after our spiritual side. We have to look after our material wealth. We have to look after ourselves. So number one is oneself. A person can't afford to give charity. If he gives charity, he's going to be poor himself. His priority is himself first. Look after yourself first. Number two is one's poor parents. Number three is one's children. Number four is one's siblings. Number five, he says, one's immediate neighbors. Number six is the poor people and who live in the town. Number seven, he says, other people. So that's the level in terms of charity. Who do you give it to? What's the priorities in charity? Now it's interesting, there's a Mishnah in Peah, I think we talked about it last week, which discusses certain things which have no quantity in the Torah. One of the famous questions the rabbis ask is, how come there's no blessing when you perform an act of charity? Perform an act of kindness. You do a mitzvah, normally there's a blessing to say. You light the Shabbat candles. Asher kidisham shtazvanu le'alik ner shel Shabbat. God commanded us and sanctified us by this mitzvah of lighting the candles. The person says Hallel, as a bracha on the Hallel. The person says a mitzvah, there's usually a blessing to be said. When it comes to acts of kindness, there's no blessing. In fact, it doesn't only apply to acts of kindness, but also acts between man and man. For example, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to honor one's father and mother. Fifth commandment, right? Honor your father and mother. Ever seen anyone say a blessing before you honor your parents, right? Father says, get me a glass of water. Yes, Dad. Here. Just 1 second. Before you take it, I'm going to say a blessing. Give it to him. There's no blessing. So we find an act between man and man, there's no blessings. Why? It's One of the answers, yes.
There's no shear to it.
Right, there's no quantity. One of the answers is there's no quantity. So a mitzvah where there's no quantity, there's no minimum, there's no maximum. Mm-hmm. So how do you know you performed the mitzvah? There's no end to it. So I didn't perform the mitzvah, I performed a little piece of it. There's no absolute mitzvah over here. That's one answer. There's another answer, which is interesting, is when you say a bracha, when you say a blessing is, when an action can be interpreted both ways. Are you doing it for God's sake, or are you doing it for your sake? When you do something which is altruistic, there's no question why you're doing it. It was an act of kindness. Why would a person do an act of kindness? It's unheard of. Before the Torah came along, people never did acts of kindness. It was unheard of. If you don't believe in God, who is a good God, why would I want to do an act of kindness? It doesn't make sense. This guy's poor, I'm rich. Okay, I'm fine, everything's good, everything's well. Why should I look after him? The Torah tells us this, we're created, everyone's created in the image of God. If we're all God's children, then we're all related. If we're all related, we have to care about each other. So that's where the origins of kindness, it's very deep. The origins of kindness, you have to go back to God to believe in kindness. And that's the roots. All the secular humanists today, they don't realize secular humanism is based on thousands of years of religion. If there was no religion, there'd be no secular humanism. So it's all the basis of everything goes back to Jewish law. So there's no limit to the acts of kindness. It's interesting. Acts of kindness, you can visit the sick once a day, you can visit the whole hospital, you can visit 20 hospitals. There's no limits. The Torah does not give limits to it. All these things have no limits. You want to help someone, you can help them the whole day, you can help them part of the day, you can help them 1 minute. You can smile once, or you can smile 20 times. It doesn't make a difference. There's no limits to acts of kindness. Obviously, the more a person does, the bigger, the more reward a person gets, the more mitzvah it is, the more the mitzvah. So, acts of kindness. A person has a child, you raise the child. How long does it take to raise a child? Well, in America, it takes about 25 years or more. Raise a child, that's an act of kindness. You've done an act of kindness. 25 years of kindness. It's a lot of time. Person's married, and they're giving and taking in the marriage. Every act of kindness they do, that's an act of kindness. It's an act of kindness. Person dies even, you can do an act of kindness by praying for the soul, by doing Kaddish, by lighting a candle. A person does kindness to the deceased even. There's kindness even after death. So acts of kindness is very... There's no limits to acts of kindness. There is a limit, however, to charity, which we're going to come to. The Code of Jewish Law says... And it's based on the Talmud. The Talmud says, when a person gives charity, they shouldn't become poor by giving charity. So the Talmud says a limit. It says 20%. In the first year, it says 20% wants capital. The first time a person gives, say, if, for example, a person inherited money. They came into inheritance. So the money that comes in, that's the capital. It's not income, but it's capital. So the first time they get it, it's like income, and therefore a person's going to give between 10 and 20%. Between 10 and 20. A person who's generous can give 20. That's the maximum. There's a big debate today. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, even a multi-millionaire is not allowed to give more than 20%. The Talmud says, the only time a person give more than 20% is when they're on their deathbed. They give as much as they want. Even though they have children and they have family, they're free to give as much as they want away. They're allowed to give as much as they want away. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, even a wealthy man cannot give more than 20%. Rav Avadi Yosef says, Sfaradic opinion, he says, a wealthy person will not get poor. The whole Talmud reason is, if you give too much, you might get poor. So he says, a multi-millionaire, a billionaire, whatever, Bill Gates, whatever, he's got 80 billion, at least, before the stocks crashed. He had 80 billion now, maybe has 40 billion now. He's allowed to give a lot. He may give more than 20%, because even if he gives more than 20%, he's not going to get poor. So there's a big debate about how much can a person give. But the average person should not give more than 20%, because he may lose it and may rely on other people. So it's better, a person's going to look after themselves. A person's got to give as much as they can afford to give so they don't go bankrupt. There's no point in giving too much and going bankrupt and then relying on charity oneself. It's got to be a perpetuating system so you can keep on giving. So it's very important. So that's the idea of the limits. The rabbis place limits. There's no limits to kindness. Acts of kindness, you want to spend your whole day helping people? Fine. But don't do it at the expense of your job. Don't do it at the expense of your own livelihood. I want to help people. There's a beautiful story, the Baal Shem Tov, well, he passed away on Shavuot, right? His yahrzeit was Shavuot, Baal Shem Tov. So Baal Shem Tov, it says, once had a dream that a certain innkeeper has got a very high level in Olam Haba, in the world to come. So, yeah, I want to check him out. So he goes to the hotel. It's a hotel. It's clean, it's tidy, it's this, it's that. Well, but at the end of the time, He gets a bill. Okay, pays the bill. So what's the great deal about this innkeeper? Why is he such a great person? So he gets into a conversation with him. He says, tell me, he says, why are you an innkeeper? He says, the truth, Rabbi, says, I love giving to people. The trouble is, if I keep giving, I like having guests. If I keep having guests, I'm going to go broke. So I said, I'm going to have an inn. But my main purpose of this inn is not to make money. My main purpose of the inn is to give as much as I can to the people. Whereas it depends on a person's intentions. A person's intention is to give, even though they're charging money. Their whole purpose is, I'm not doing it for the money. I'm doing the money is so I can live. Why do I want to live? In order that I can give more back. So it's like a perpetuating system. Same idea with charity. A person has to give charity, but a person has to work to give the charity. A person's not allowed to go bankrupt, because then he won't be able to give more charity. So it's a perpetuating system. And that's true about Jewish life in general. The Torah says, the bottom line of the mitzvot is v'chai b'hem. The Torah says you will live through the commandments. Yom Kippur, person's sick, break Yom Kippur. So life takes priority, usually on most of the commandments, except for three, the rabbis say. Three cardinal sins a person's got to give his life and not transgress. What are they? Murder, person says, put a gun to his head, go kill so-and-so. Can't do it, sorry. Thomas says, who says your blood is redder than his blood? Who says you're worth more than his? Maybe he's worth more than you are. So why are you allowed to go and kill him and save your life? Number two, immorality. Don't put the gun to his head. Don't do this immoral act. Sorry, can't do it. And the third thing is idolatry. Many Jews gave their lives not to convert to other religions because it's idolatry or other things, pagan practices, not to bow to the idols. So those are three things. But apart from that, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to stay alive. Imagine, a person stays alive, he's doing a mitzvah. You can have a good dinner, or a healthy dinner, you're doing a mitzvah. What mitzvah? Staying alive. You're looking after yourself. It's a mitzvah to stay alive so we can serve God more. The whole purpose of staying alive is to serve God. So it's a perpetuating system. We don't believe, like the Hezbollah, you kill yourself, you've done a mitzvah, you go to paradise. And the more you kill, the bigger the mitzvah. On the contrary, it's the opposite. So the mitzvah of kindness is one of the pillars on which the world stands. Shimon HaTzadik says in Pirkei Avot, on three things does the world rest: on the Torah. What does that mean? Without the ethics and the morals of the Torah, the world will be destroyed. Hitler came along to destroy a world which is based on ethics and morals. He wanted to destroy the fabric of the world. The world will be destroyed. Avodah, service of God. It's no service of God, the world is going to be destroyed as well. And acts of kindness. So it's one of the three pillars. Acts of kindness are so important ingredients to the sustenance of the world, sustaining the world. So charity is an act of kindness which is fulfilled through one's monetary property. And that's what the Torah says. You will open your hand to your poor brother. And there's a negative commandment as well. The Torah says, don't hide your face from your poor brother. So open your hand and don't hide your face. Positive and the negative as well. Where do we get this idea of a tenth? Yes.
I thought that giving charity when the person doesn't know Martin says that, yes, is a very big mitzvah.
Yeah, we're coming to it.
Now you are saying just the opposite. Open your hand and don't hide your face.
Right. Don't hide your face means don't. The person says, you know what, I don't want to see his face, but I don't want to give him. Lock the door in his face. Oh. That's what it means. Don't hide your face. I'm going to go through the eight levels. The Rambam's eight levels of charity towards the end of the class. By hiding from a poor man, you see a poor man coming. Okay, hides under the bed or whatever. You know the famous joke, it says, the son opens the door, and the guy says, your father here? He says, my father says that he's not in. Or I gave it the office, or whatever it is. There's always excuses. But a person's got to know also, number one, is if you don't know if the person's poor or not, the obligation is only to a poor person. Some people today, they're not really poor. You don't know.
That covers you.
But it's always better to give a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you're covered either way. It's always better to give a dollar. This way, you're covered either way. Right, you don't know. You never know what's going on. And the general rule today in a homeless person is don't give money. Could be drug addict, whatever. Give food. Give a bun, give a bagel, give something, food. But don't give them money because if they use it for drugs or other things, then it's not a mitzvah, then it's an avera. This is a sin instead of a mitzvah. Where do we get this concept of a tenth to charity? It's a very old one. It's mentioned already in the book of Bereishit in Genesis, where Abraham fights a war and he captures a lot of booty. And he gives one tenth of his possessions to the king of Shalem, which is Jerusalem. Malchi Tzedek, the king of Shalem. Malchi Tzedek, the king of righteousness, was no other than Shem, the son of Noah, who was alive at that time. So it gives him a tenth of whatever he captured. The first idea of a tenth. Second idea of a tenth is Jacob. Jacob has his vision of angels going up and down the ladder. He wakes up in the morning and he says, he makes a vow to God. He says, if you help me and you are with me, he says, whatever you give me, I'll give you back a tenth. So we see this concept of tithe is a tenth. We find also in Jewish law that when the Torah was given, in agricultural societies, Jewish law says you have to give a part of your crop. So you had to give to the Kohen, you had to give 2%. To the Levite, you had to give 10%. And then to the poor, you had to give an extra 10%. So it's like a tax on the agriculture. Now, who enforced this tax? There's no IRS, there's no government, there's nothing. Everything's enforced by a person's belief in God. The Jewish system is self-enforcement. The first thing we need to do is have fear of God, which means a person believes in God, knows God wants them to do this thing. It's self-enforcing. It's a self-enforcing system. We don't need any police on the beat. No cops, no IRS, no investigators. It's a self-enforcing. We leave it up to the person's conscience. So a person believes in God, has a conscience. Hopefully, that's conscience, by the way, is the soul. How do a person know if he has a soul or not? Does the conscience prick him? Does he feel guilty? Judaism is guilt is very good. We have to cultivate the guilt. If we quiet down the guilt, we're really cutting down our soul. Let's realize that. If a person does something bad, he feels guilty, he knows his soul is well in life. Rabbis compare guilt to pain, physical pain. Just like there's physical pain, there's spiritual pain. A person doesn't feel the physical pain. How do they know if a person's alive or dead? They poke him. Ah! Good. Baruch Hashem. He feels pain, he's alive. How do you know if the soul is alive or dead? A person feels conscience pricking, the soul is alive. A person works in a concentration camp and kills people non-stop without any pangs of conscience, he's a dead soul. He's living, but he's dead. So that's an interesting idea. So it's self-enforcement. Laws of charity. Who enforces it? Give 10%. Who enforces it? Between man and God. Only God knows what a person does. Did you give it? You didn't give it? Man and God. So that's man and God. Even though it's a man and man action, only God knows the truth. What's going on? So there's tithing also in agriculture. And then there's tithing also on monetary level. So the Code of Jewish Law says there's four levels of tithing. Number one, it says a very wealthy person should give as much as the poor require. So a poor man comes to your house, says, I don't have a roof over my head. I don't have clothes to wear. You've got to take him to see us, buy him clothes. It doesn't have to be very extravagant clothes. You've got to give him clothes. You've got to give him food. You've got to give him a roof over his head. You've got to give as much as he needs. That's for a very wealthy person. He can do everything for the person. The second is an average person should give at least, he says, 1/5 of one's possessions. So the first year from his capital, and the second year from the income. And then he says the recommended minimum for an average person is 1/10. He says less than this is miserliness. Giving less than 1/10 is miserliness. And then he says the absolute minimum is not less than 1/3 of a shekel, which is a small amount of money, a year. 1/3 of a shekel a year. 5 shekels is about $100. So one shekel is 20. So therefore, 1/3 of a shekel is about $6.
Not today's shekel, there's
4 shekels. Right, not today's shekel, No. In those days, shekel is a weight of silver. So you're talking about $10 a year, nothing. So at least the minimum a person gives to charity is $10 a year. So most people do that anyway. So that's the issue of charity. Let's go through the 8 levels of charity that the Rambam discusses. Rambam says, we're obliged to be very careful with the mitzvah of charity, tzedakah. More than all the other mitzvot, more than all other positive commandments. So there are positive commandments and negative commandments. There are do's and don'ts. There are 248 do's and 365 don'ts. It's very easy to remember the don'ts because there's 365 days in the year. So 365 don'ts. How many altogether? 613. So just take away 613 from 365, you get 248. 248 positive do's and 365 negative. So 365 negative don'ts. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Just by going to sleep, imagine, it's so easy to be a Jew. Just go to sleep and you keep all the don'ts. When people come to me and they're just starting off, and I tell them, keep Shabbat. So it's very hard, Rabbi. So it's very easy. Why? Just go to sleep. Don't do anything. So one guy came to me a couple of weeks ago. He says, Rabbi, he says, I followed your advice. It was great. I slept the whole day. Kept Shabbat. First day, kept Shabbat. First day in his life, kept Shabbat. Kept Shabbat. How to keep Shabbat? Kept sleep. It was great. We went to sleep, we chatted, had our food, and kept Shabbat. That was the way. So there's takes a lot of pressure. You just tell people, what do you have to do? Nothing. Just go to sleep. It's very easy. So a person keeps 365 commandments just by sleeping. As long as it depends how they're sleeping, who they're sleeping with. That's something else. That's a different issue. Not all the time they fulfill the 365. Person's got to be careful. Hey, you got to watch the audience and, oh, sleeping, okay. There's 248 positive ones. Which one is the most important of all the positive commandments? Rambam says, we have to be careful with the mitzvah of staka, of charity, more than all the other positive commandments. Why? Because charity is a sign of a child of Abraham. What differentiates Jews from others? This is one of the things which differentiates us from the whole world. Because how do you know a Jew? He's righteous in terms of giving, helping others. That's a sign of a Jew. If he doesn't help others, it's not a sign of a Jew. So tzedakah is, that's why we have to be careful. We're Jews. What's the sign of a Jew? Tzedakah, charity, righteousness. So that's the most important mitzvah a person has got to be push themselves to do. And he says, the whole religion is based on this foundation. If there's no charity, Judaism will go fall apart by the wayside. And that's why Abraham was chosen from everyone else. Why was Abraham chosen? The Torah tells us, because the Torah, God tells Abraham, he says, I choose you. Why? Because you teach your children after you tzedakah u'mishpat. You teach the children after you righteousness and justice. Through the foundation of Judaism is righteousness and justice. Prior to that, people didn't teach their children. It's interesting. The first one to teach his children, people thought, like today, people think, children will get it. They're automatically, they're going to be good by themselves. So the schools don't teach ethics. They don't teach morals. You go to school and hopefully the child will get it. Do they get it or not? What's that book, Lord of the Flies? Have you read Lord of the Flies? The Children on the Desert Island. Is that a book, right? Lord of the Flies. So they put the children on a desert island and they grow up by themselves and eventually turn into they eat each other up, right? Savages. So people think children are automatically good. It's not true. They're innocent. Judaism says they're innocent. Christianity says they're guilty. They're born guilty because of original sin. Judaism says they're born innocent. Children are innocent. So how do they learn? They have to learn something. They have to fill up the vacuum in their minds. How do they fill it up? They see what's going on around them. They learn from what goes around. So they're taught righteousness and goodness at an early age, they're going to pick it up. They're going to be righteousness and good. If they're not taught it, there's a vacuum. It's not instinctive. Unfortunately, society today is making a big mistake, thinking that children instinctively know what's good and what's right and what's wrong. It's wrong. Big mistake. It's a diabolical mistake. We're reaping the rewards of this mistake. We have to teach our children righteousness. And that's what Abraham was good at, right? Abraham Avinu taught his children. Taught Ishmael even. Ishmael, who the Arabs come from Ishmael.
Yes, Ishmael he taught him. Also taught righteousness.
Yes. Where do we see this? We find when Abraham has the three guests, he invites them to his house, says he tells the lad, go and prepare the meat, and go and bring the cheese, and go and bring the milk. Gives them instructions. Help me do the mitzvah of having guests in my house. He's teaching his son. It was Ishmael. The Rashi says over there, it was the lad Ishmael, and we find the Arabs still today are very, very hospitable. Yes. Yeah. If you're in their house, you're treated like a king. When you walk out, you better watch your back. But when you're in the house, you're treated like a king. They're really treated like a king. If they have one jug of water, they give you the jug of water. They have one cushion, they give you the cushion. I know, I was there. When I was in Israel, I learned circumcision by a mohel who did all the Arabs. He was like the king of Jericho. Yeah, we went through Jericho before the Intifada. He was like the king. He went through Jericho, everyone waved at him. Rabbi Mohel. This guy's the circumcision. And we were always the experts he introduced from America. We were the experts. We didn't know anything, but that's how he introduced us. But they're very hospitable. Very, very hospitable. Where did they learn it from? Abraham. Abraham taught it to his son Ishmael. Yes. So righteousness, that's our standard. That is the sign of a Jew, righteousness. And it's amazing. You won't find any other government or system where someone who doesn't know someone else. Jews of America pay a Jew in Russia to move to Israel. It doesn't make sense what you do. I don't even know the guy, but I feel related to him. And you feel related to him. So the truth is we have to feel related to every single human being. Because the Torah says, Adam, was not Jew. It was created in the image of God. Every single human being is created in the image of God. And we have to look for the image of God in people. Very important. Everyone, if you look at someone's eyes, you'll see the spark of the soul. Some people, unfortunately, we said, don't have a conscience. They don't have that soul. But most people have a spark over there of goodness inside them, which is the image of God inside them. And that what links, that's what bonds all humanity. And also, furthermore, he says, the Jews will only be redeemed through acts of righteousness. If we do acts of righteousness, that brings the redemption closer. And so it's very, very important. So number one is, righteousness is the stamp of a Jew. That was the stamp of Abraham, which he passed down to Judaism. Number two, the whole of our religion is based on righteousness. And number three, righteousness hastens the redemption. We're still waiting for redemption. We need more acts of righteousness. Okay. So now we come to the different levels, the eight levels of charity. And the highest level of charity, is interesting, is not even what we consider charity. Giving someone a job. Teaching someone a trade is the highest level of charity. Why? So right, what's that saying? The saying is, if you give someone a fish, you feed him for a day. You teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. So teaching someone how to fish is very, very important. Teaching someone a trade, giving them a job, finding them a job, an honorable job, is the highest level of charity. For example, what's the highest level of charity? I have a company. A guy comes to me destitute. Please, help me. So you know what? I don't give money just like that. Come and work for me, I have a job for you. I invent a job for him. I don't have a job for him. I'll teach him a trade. Come and work for me. That's the highest level of charity. Why? Because he does not feel obligated at all. Self-respect, right? Self-respect is intact. We build up his self-esteem. That's the highest level of charity is. So charity is not just a financial aspect. It's also going to look at the guy's self-respect. Are you building up his self-esteem? Or are you lowering the self-esteem? If you hand him a dollar and say, hi, okay, here you are, take it. Guy says, okay, what am I? I'm just a beggar on the street. But if you say, okay, come in and work for me, so now I have a job. It feels respectable. Respectable source of income. So giving someone a respectable source of income is the highest level of charity. So we have to try and do more of it. So you see people wandering around, best thing to do is open a school, give them a trade, and that's the highest level of charity. So that's number one. And that's the highest level is, he says, give them a loan, but people want to start a business. You give them a loan, that's also a high level of charity. You give them a gift with no strings attached, that's also a high level of charity. Or you make him a part of your partner of yours. You have a business, you make him your partner, that's a high level of charity. Or you find him a job, highest level of charity. So this it says, the Torah says, V'chai imach, your friend should live with you, on the same level as you. You're working, make him a partner. Get him a job, get him a trade. That's very important, that's number one, that's highest level of charity. Number two, lower level. There's a person who gives charity to the poor, and he doesn't know who he's giving to, and they don't know who's getting from. That's the number two, which is the second level of charity, which is use an intermediary. So this way, no one knows who's giving to who. So you put the money in the pushka, put it inside the charity box. And you have to, number one, you have to know that the person who's distributing the charity is an honorable person, not putting it in his pocket. That's number one. You have to know the person who's in charge of the... Today they have lists of how much what's called overhead the charitable organizations take for the paying their staff. So obviously the less overhead, the better. You know, the money's going straight to charity. So that's number one. Number two, number one is helping someone get a trade. Number two is giving someone, and you don't know who you're giving to, and they don't know who they're getting it from.
Again, saving his self-respect.
Right.
Because doesn't
right.
Know that
he doesn't feel embarrassed. When he sees you, he doesn't feel embarrassed. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know who you are. The third level is, and also you don't feel, he owes me a favor. I helped this so-and-so. There he is, walking down the street, doesn't even say hello to me. So that's also, it works both ways. It's unfortunate, we're human beings, we have human feelings. You help someone, you always feel like he owes you something. The highest level of charity is giving with no thought of getting right back at all. Altruism is the highest level. Hashem, we said, is the most altruistic you ever think of. Any altruistic being, God gives with no thought of return. God does not want anything back from us. What does he want from us?
We
should be like him. Just to emulate him. What do we want from our kids? What do we want from our kids? We want our kids to be like us. Our kids to emulate the good part of us, not the bad part of us. We want our kids to be better than us. A good parent wants the kids to be better than them.
That's what God wants.
Right? Number three. Third level is that the person who's giving knows who he's giving to, But the other person, the poor person, doesn't know who's giving it to him. This way his self-esteem is intact. Even though I know, hey, I gave him, he owes me a favor, but his self-esteem at least is intact. He doesn't know who gave him. So put the money through his letterbox, mailbox. No one knows who he gave it to. Put it under his door. When he's not around, put the food in his front yard. So all these ways of giving quietly, when no one knows. But the person who's giving knows, but the person who's receiving doesn't know who's giving to him. That's the third level. Fourth level is, the poor person knows who's giving to him, but the person who's giving doesn't know who's getting it. So poor person knows there's one person in town who supports everyone. And but the person who's giving doesn't know, he gives it to someone else to distribute. But everyone knows this, his money. So the poor person knows who's giving, but the rich person doesn't know who's getting it. That's the fourth level. Fifth level is to give someone before they ask. That's also a very high level. Someone comes to the door before even asking. Yeah. He doesn't even ask. What do you need? What's going on? I need this. I need that. Ah, take before even asking. Take. Sixth level, to give after he asks. Seventh level, to give depressed. Okay, you caught me. Yeah. Okay, that's the sixth level. It's also charity. It's high level. It's not nothing to be laughed at. None of these things are to be laughed at. Even if you do a mitzvah with the lowest motivation and the lowest level, you still did the deed. The deed is still alive and well. The main thing is to do it. So that's the
seventh.
Right. So the seventh level is to give less than what's required with a good face. That's number seven. Number eight is to give what's required with a bad face. So to give less with a cheerful face is better than giving everything with a sour face. And it's also compared to the laws of honoring one's parents. It says a person honors their parents but with a depressed countenance. But he gives them whatever they need. Here, Dad, take everything you want. Well, here it is. But with a scowl, with a frown, is not as great as a person does less with a cheer, with a smile. So it's very important. The smile, the positive attitude, self-respect is number one in terms of a poor person. It's very important to treat them with respect, honor. And I just want to end off with a beautiful story. It's a great story. There was a town in Poland, apparently it's a true story, where everyone knew that the rich guy over there was a skinflint. He was a miser. He was a miser in the town. And when he died, the Chevra Kadisha refused to bury him. He says, this guy's a skinflint, never helped a person in his life. Why should we bury him? Let him suffer. So the news gets to the rabbi. The rabbi says, no, we gotta bury him. It's a mitzvah. We have to do our mitzvah. He didn't do his mitzvah. That's his problem. We've got to do our mitzvah. We've got to bury him. We'll bury him in a very simple ceremony. I left out part of the story. The part of the story is, before the guy dies, the rabbi goes to visit him. He hears a rumor, he's dying. He says, now maybe he'll give money. Before he dies, maybe he'll give money. Now maybe he'll repent on his deathbed. So the rabbi goes to the poor person, the rich guy. He says, please give me, I need this. We need somebody. We have so many poor people in the town. Please help us before you die. It's going to be a big merit for you. The guy says, no. But here's all my papers for safekeeping. He gives the rabbis the papers. So then he dies, and then the rabbi gets him buried very simply. Very simply. No one mourns for him. Good riddance. What happens? The following week, the Thursday, the following week, the rabbi hears knocks on his door. He says, Rabbi, I need help. I don't have any food for Shabbat. She says, okay. Here's the money, take. Another guy comes. So all of a sudden, the rabbi says, what's going on over here? How come this week is different from all the other weeks? This week, all of a sudden, there's a glut of poor people. So he tries researching. What happened? How come this week you need money? He says, every Thursday night, I would find money pushed under my door. Every Thursday night. One after another. Every Thursday night. So when does this money start? So, well, you know that miser in that town, that so-and-so, a dirty so-and-so? I went to him. When I came to town, people said, you're poor, go and see the miser. I went to the miser. He asked me 50 questions. How many people in your house? How many children do you have? What do you do? Blah, 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 blah. How much do you need? And then he threw him out. He threw me out. But from that week on, under my door came that amount of money. Every Thursday. So Rabbi puts two and two together. Then he says, that miser gave me some pieces of paper. What are these pieces of paper? So he opens up all the paper and he finds how much he gives to each person every week. So that's the highest level of charity. No one knew that he's giving, and he didn't know he's giving to all these people, but that's a very high level of charity. And he never got any reward in this world because no one knew. And by the way, there's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says, when a person gives, his highest level is, people shouldn't know who's giving. So how do we allow people to put their names on buildings? So this law is about 300 years old. Magen Avraham says, today people don't want to give. We have to encourage them to give. How do we encourage them to give? We make a big show for them. It's better they give with a big show than not give at all. So how do we encourage people? We go, okay, put a plaque on the building, we'll put your name up in lights, we'll make a big parade for you, we'll make a big party for you, just give the money. Oh, okay, you make a parade for me? Okay, I'll give the money. It's better a person gives. We said giving is the main thing. Intentions will come later. Talmud says, "Mitoch shelo lishma balishma." Always do the action with the wrong motives. Even eventually, the motives will come. Just get into the mode of doing, and eventually, the motives will come. So, deed is the most important thing. Judaism is a very deed-oriented religion. You don't believe, you don't do, just do it. Eventually, everything will fall into place. Today, it's called behavior modification. It's a whole branch of psychology today. It's behavior modification. You change someone's behavior, you'll change the way they think. Judaism says, "Do the good." Eventually, everything will fall into place. Okay, we'll continue next week. Thanks to everyone to come back. Last week we had a bit of a shortage of people.